is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're underway on our Friday edition of the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Sportsbook Studio with Mike Palm. I'm Ben Wilson. Excited to be with you, Mike. Next couple of days here as we are now into preseason football. We expect to see some lines, wouldn't you say? Probably next couple of days, lines out for week one of the preseason?
Yeah, I think so. They'll be posted no later than tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, good stuff. Next Thursday, we'll get into a full docket of week one preseason. We had the one game underway last night, even though it didn't complete. But we did see at least a quarter, two quarters and a half or so on the Hall of Fame game. And we'll talk some Houston Texans football right now as we go out to our progressive guest line. He was in Canton last night, covers the team for the Houston Chronicle. Jonathan Alexander at John M. Alexander joins us right now. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time. As far as the game, we actually did see, I think the most intriguing part for all of us was watching how the kickoffs were all playing out here. From actually being there in person and from what you had talked to coaches about their expectations, how did what we saw on the field actually jive with some of the expectations and some of the things coaches have talked about as it relates to this new kickoff rule this year?
Yeah, I think there was a lot that the coaching staff didn't know how things would shake out, but they had studied it all this offseason. I think what they didn't realize and what they realized from Thursday night's game is that there were still a lot of violent hits there. You know, the NFL really created this to increase player safety and also get more kick returns, but I think players still got hurt. Like, in particular, Texans linebacker Jake Hansen suffered what appeared to be a head injury on one of the kickoffs. I think there were still some kinks to work out. A couple of player movement, illegal movement violations on the kick return from the Texans. But I think that there will still be some concerns moving forward because it didn't look like it slowed down the collisions that happened on the kick return.
Jonathan, I want to ask you a question about the defensive side of the ball for the Texans, and particularly the tackles. They lose two very good tackles in Collins and Rankins. How are they going to replace them this year on the defensive front?
Yeah, they feel like they had to get – they went out and got added more depth by adding pieces like Mario Edwards, who's a versatile defender who could play defensive end and defensive tackle. Denico Autry, who was one of the best at it, but recently was suspended for 6 games. He was certainly in their plans. And then they added other pieces like Fale Fatukante, who has experience playing in D'Amico's system, having played with the Jets under Robert Saleh, and then Tim Settle. But they're definitely going to have a drop-off. Sheldon Rankins would, in my opinion, would be considered a top 10 defensive tackle. Malik Collins, probably top 20. So there's definitely a drop-off, but I think the thinking from the Texans was that Collins in particular didn't fit D'Amico's system as much as the players that they brought in. And they think that by adding more pieces and having guys you can rotate, they'll be a lot fresher and guys come in and attack opposing offenses as much as they would like.
He's Jonathan Alexander joining us right now, breaking down the Houston Texans from the Houston Chronicle right now on the Lombardi Line. In a similar fashion to Jonathan, this is a pass defense 20th in the NFL on an EPA per play basis last year. We clearly saw a drop-off in production from Jimmy Ward, who was more brought in to be one of those veteran presence guys coming over, had played for D'Amico Ryans previously in San Francisco. What's the thought now as far as development, where you've seen Derek Stingley struggle with injury so far as a bright young piece of that secondary? What is the outlook for a secondary that was exposed at times last year for Houston?
Yeah, absolutely. I think injuries were a big deal for the Texans. They didn't have a nickel cornerback as well. They used Jimmy Ward at nickel a lot, and Jimmy, I think, is 33. So they've kind of switched things up. They're going to use Jalen Petrie at nickel now, and that's what Jalen Petrie did at Baylor. They also added some pieces to their secondary. They drafted Kamari Lassiter in the second round out of Georgia, and being honest, Kamari Lassiter has been one of the more impressive players in camp. He's locked down some of the best wide receivers on this team. He's gone up against Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell, and he's making plays consistently. So they believe they've gotten better there. Of course, Jalen Petrie is entering year 3, so he should be improved. He struggled a little bit last year, and having him play going back and forth between nickel and safety should definitely help. So they think they've improved and gotten better in areas. And then, of course, Derek Stingley, he had the year he had when he was healthy. 5 interceptions, which is 4th in the league, despite missing 6 games. And they think if he can stay healthy, he can be a superstar.
I want to talk about, Jonathan, the mentality of the team and how Nico takes this team into year 2 from being the hunter to the hunted. We talk about all the games but one in that early window, that 1 o'clock Eastern window, and the schedule. The schedule is very difficult. When you look at Jacksonville division champs 2 years ago, they went 1-4 against the 5 other division champs last year and 2-5 against the teams with winning records. The Texans this year have to play 11 teams with winning records on their schedules. What's your overall outlook for them moving forward in terms of season win total sits at 9.5 and a division championship?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. They have one of the most difficult schedules in the NFL, and you look at that later stretch where they play the Ravens, the Chiefs, and slipping my mind, but I think the Dolphins, all in a 10-day span. That's going to be difficult for them. But what the Texans tried to do to mitigate that was by adding crucial pieces. They got better. They added Stephon Diggs to this roster. So that wide receiver core is really good. They added Daniil Hunter on defense. They added Joe Mixon as a running back. They felt like they added a lot of strong pieces to make this team better to be able to compete with some of these top teams down the stretch. But there's no question about it. It's going to be a tough schedule. And I'm predicting them to win about 10 games, go 10-7. I think what will help the other teams in the AFC South, particularly the Jaguars, if they don't have such a tough schedule. I don't think that the Colts got a ton better. They brought back a lot of their pieces, but I don't think they got a ton better. But there's no doubt I think the Texans have the best talent in the AFC South.
Crucially, too, we'll get extra rest for those Week 10 games against the Lions, the Week 17 game against the Baltimore Ravens. That is very important with how tough the schedule is for Houston here as we're talking with Jonathan Alexander on our Progressive Guest Line. It's unquestioned now. You talk about the wide receiver additions. I mean, it's a legit top five unit. You have C.J. Stroud. I mean, he ascended. You're pushing back, Mike? You don't think the Texans are a top five?
I think they have too many guys that want the ball.
Well,
that's what I think. How do you spread the ball? That's a good question for Jonathan steal your question.
No. It's all good.
You bring in Diggs, right? And you've already got Nico Collins. Tank Dell was terrific, just absolutely terrific. You've got Dalton Schultz and now Joe Mixon. That's a lot of guys that want the ball. How do they spread it around in this offense, Jonathan?
I think that's more than a fair question. It's a question that I've asked. I think the good thing about the Texans is that Tank Dell and Nico Collins have already proven to be unselfish players. I think they understand the talent that Diggs brings, so I don't think those two will be complaining. I do think Stephon Diggs is the wild card. We know that he likes to get the ball. It'll be interesting to see how he responds if there are some games where he doesn't get a ton of targets. But I think C.J. Stroud also has a ton of experience in this. He played with a lot of great wide receivers when he was at Ohio State. Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Marvin Harrison, all on the same team, and all of them found ways to still shine. And I think the more you can create that unselfish culture, and I think they brought this point to Stephon Diggs before he was traded, that this is a team that will spread the ball around and that he can't have that type of mentality to succeed in this type of offense. I think they get it, and I think they'll be mindful of that. And I think they all know that there will be games where there might be a person who won't get as many targets as they would like. So, I think that they're aware of it, so I think they'll be able to handle it.
We saw tons of offensive linemen last year. Jonathan had to get cycled through because of injury. We also saw OC Bobby Sloak at times struggle with being predictable, second highest rate of run-run-pass sequencing of anybody in the NFL. What are your expectations from Sloak's perspective, assuming now the offensive line is a little bit more fortified here as far as the play calling and more development and growth there for the offense?
Yeah, they really got to stay healthy on the offensive line. And they have been healthy, fairly healthy, pretty much on the interior with Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, who missed a lot of time last year. Laramie Tunsil at left tackle is coming back from an injury. They just hope they can get some consistency there and not have to deal with the injuries that they dealt with. But that was one of the issues for Bobby Sloak as far as the predictability. And I think he started to learn that towards the end of the year, where he started to change up how he did his runs and passes instead of just running, and then pass. He started to change it up. And I think he's a smart guy. He learns from his mistakes. And I think they'll be more purposeful. I think they also have a more effective running game if Joe Mixon can be healthy. I think Damian Pierce will also be a little improved this year. He doesn't really fit the scheme that Bobby Slowick employs, but I think he's done a great job in trying to fix the mistakes that he made last year. And then Joe Mixon, he knows how to play in this offense. He's had success. So I think they'll be a little bit better prepared this year.
A lot of excitement around the Houston Texans in 2024. Division favorites there in the AFC South. A pleasure speaking with Jonathan Alexander from the Houston Chronicle. Give him a follow at John M. Alexander. Really appreciate the time, man. Great insights on the Texans this year.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We will have more NFL to talk about in a little bit on the show, Mike. But up next, Olympics. We're down to the home stretch. Men's basketball into the final group stage game tomorrow. We'll get a discussion on that. Also, what to expect Olympic women's soccer quarterfinals tomorrow morning. We'll break it all down on the Lombardi Line after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Right now on our website, VSiN.com, Adam Burke with his Major League Baseball best bets for this loaded Friday card. We also have all sorts of Olympic coverage. Zach Cohen breaking down the Olympic basketball and the tennis every single day. As we're underway now, second semifinal on the men's side. On serve early between Novak Djokovic and Lorenzo Musetti. There with a match against Carlos Alcaraz in the gold medal match on the line. Iga Swiatek did win the bronze earlier today, Mike.
I saw that.
Huge favorite to win the gold. He did not.
Yeah.
Shock upset.
Gil had Coco and Iga meeting in the final. I think he had the Iga-Coco exacta. Didn't get there.
How many people had the Quinwen Zhang-Donovekic exacta?
Nobody. It's been good. And the men's draw has been interesting. I thought maybe Alcaraz could will Nadal a little further along in the doubles. It wasn't to be.
Similar with Andy Murray retiring after, and Dan Evans couldn't will him along either, although we're Dan Evans, Carlos Alcaraz, slightly different on the scale. Alas, Olympics, a really good weekend too as we get into some of the knockout rounds for the women's soccer front, U.S. taking on Japan. Also, we'll have our final group stage matches for the men's basketball. That's tomorrow morning, 11:15 a.m. Eastern time, USA taking on Puerto Rico. Giant favorites, as you would expect, Mike. Within that respective match. The thing I couldn't believe, though, are some of these odds now on the Olympic MVP, because there are two games, and this really started when the U.S. narrowly beat South Sudan, the final tune-up in the preseason exhibitions, is a 43.5-point favorite winning by one. But LeBron James at even money to win MVP for the team, granted you're baking in, like, Kevin Durant's 4-1 and was very, very solid in the first game against Serbia. But those are two games where the U.S. was always winning comfortably, up by double digits the whole way, as evidenced by Bam Adebayo being the leading scorer in game number two against South Sudan. What am I missing on LeBron on a team that's minus 600, and yet you have LeBron James, who has been the face of the U.S. men's team, his final Olympics, even money to win MVP, assuming the U.S. were to win the gold?
Well, what price would you be willing to lay, young Ben? Because you're suggesting that's ludicrous to get even money.
I would have thought minus 150, honestly.
Okay, well.
Like, that's
move all in here. Double up.
Make the bet. I will make the bet.
He will this team to the gold. I mean, this is more important to him than anyone. You have to understand, these guys have national brands. He's worried about a global brand. Very few basketball players worried about a global brand. You can count them on two fingers, Jordan and LeBron. I'm not betting even money here, but if you think it's a great price, take your shot.
Look, Kevin Durant could outscore LeBron James, which he has the first two games by a combined 4 points. And you would still think James would get the medal, assuming he's in the mix. He's gotten the most minutes.
Who's voting? Do we know who the voters are, or is this like the WNBA, where it's all in secrecy?
I feel like when it comes to things involving the IOC, there's a good amount of secrecy. That's a fair assumption to make, would you say?
I like it's interesting that FIFA's controlling what happens in the soccer. There, you know what I mean? It's they're their own organization that outweighs anything the IOC has to say. You can't even really appeal to the IOC when you're with the droning incident. It's totally in FIFA's hands for the women. But meanwhile,
FIFA, IOC, yeah. Just bastions of
integrity and
across
transparency.
The board. USA 35-point favorites on the men's side. So look, we're not close to covering in either game against the South Sudanese. That game went all the way down to the 30 range. Are we really to believe that
it closed to 29 here?
Yeah, 29. Yeah. Are we really to believe? And South Sudan, who beat Puerto Rico already in the group stage, U.S. has come out. Now, who knows how much you want to take this at face value, but head coach Steve Kerr saying we want to put a beat down on Puerto Rico here to kind of, you know, sort of reading between the lines, he essentially illuminated to we want to put in a really good big-time winning effort here to get us with as much momentum as possible going into the quarterfinal. Are we really to believe that, I guess power ratings-wise, because South Sudan beat Puerto Rico by a narrow margin, we're just saying, oh, yeah, U.S., Puerto Rico about 6 points worse than South Sudan, that's what will make the line. That really fair? I mean, it kind of seems like we're just guessing on all this stuff when it comes to these Olympic lines.
Well, we are. It's like exhibition college basketball at the start of the year when I was playing Slippery Rock. I mean, what number do you put up? It's very difficult to gauge when there's that much separation between the teams. I was a little surprised Greece beat Australia this morning. I watched a lot of that game. I got up at 3 a.m. because I wanted to watch the women's 100, the 8 qualifying legs, which I think is the most fascinating part of this whole Olympics. Is the women's track and field. So it's fortunate, the timing. But they said they're going to run, it'll be later in the day tomorrow, the semis and the finals. Hopefully that'll we can see tomorrow night. But I have to check the timing. Obviously, all three American women moved on. Sharika Jackson won her heat, fourth fastest time or fifth fastest, but she had it shut down. She had it shut down with about 30 meters to go. T.T. Terry won. Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce in her fifth Olympics at the age of 36. This is her farewell for Jamaica. Two golds and two bronze medals for her. 08, 12, 16, and 21. Think about that as a sprinter now in your fifth Olympics. Yeah. I was very impressed with the Canadian, Audrey Leduc, who I think ran the second fastest qualifying time. MJ Talou from the Ivory Coast. I believe she's been fourth in the last two Olympics. Mm. She easily won her heat, and the girl Naita from Great Britain. I think it would be very fascinating. And obviously, you know, a lot of the favorites, you could bet these different heats, you could bet who was going to win them. A lot of the favorites were $3 and $4 favorites. Now, as we get into the semifinals and finals, you'll have a lot more betting value. I don't think you're going to see negative numbers on anyone, including Sharika Jackson.
And you would think, too, the betting interest, especially for an event like this, will go up. It's one of the you guys are going to be offering.
Yep.
So it makes it very, very enticing as we get into the gold medal rounds. Also tomorrow morning, U.S. women's soccer takes on Japan. I saw Japan in person a few years ago at the Women's World Cup. Was impressed with their defense, but at that time the Japanese women's national team just, you know, not much to really be feared about as far as the attacking the final third. I watched them play England in Nice a few years ago at the Women's World Cup. They take on the U.S. U.S. big favorites here to bet. Just updating the odds screen here to bet U.S. to win in regulation time would be minus 155. And you have to say, kind of getting the stink of the previous, you know, the Olympic shambolic failure behind the U.S., it's kind of felt fresh. They've looked a little more susceptible, wouldn't you say, Mike, at the back? But it hasn't mattered because the finishing ability of a Trinity Rodman and some of the other key pieces in the final third have been really impressive for the U.S. So no reason to believe, in my thought at least, that they will get scared here by Japan.
Not Japan. Did you make a bet for gold at all in women's soccer?
No, I didn't.
No.
I felt like I should. I felt like the bet would have been before, because there was admittedly uncertainty on the U.S. women's team. New coach coming in, but as soon as, you know, the way they looked solid early, it seems like that price kind of got away.
And this game against Australia, they probably could have scored four or five goals. I mean, they ended up sticking on the two, and then Australia gets one late on kind of the broken play in the box. But no, I think they've been in control. What was the best price you could have gotten pre-tournament on them?
I think it was in the 3-1 range. I mean, they're plus 160 right now. Spain is still the slight favorite. What is more telling to me will be how the U.S. looks against Japan. Mm. Against Japan, it was in the same group as Spain, and Spain really dominated that game, although Japan did score off Spain's excellent defense. 2-1 win for Spain. Japan had to do it the hard way. They've won back-to-back matches. So based on the peer comparison there, Mike, we'll feel, I'd say, a little bit more confident about how that U.S. matchup with Spain would look moving forward toward a potential gold medal match were it to play out that way. Also, women's basketball-wise, a relatively comfortable win over Belgium by 13 points. U.S. will take on Germany this weekend. That is Sunday morning final group stage matchup as well. Asia Wilson now the minus 120 MVP favorite. And an interesting comment, if nothing else, from Dawn Staley talking about the selection process, because we've notably not seen any of Caitlin Clark yet. Ratings still have been very, very good for the women's national team. Now, here's what Dawn Staley had to say about a very polarizing topic on Olympic sports.
There's so much conversation about women's basketball, the run you at South Carolina had to the national championship, a perfect season. Obviously, Caitlin Clark. And there was so much conversation on, should Caitlin be on the U.S. women's national team? You were part of the selection group. Mm-hmm. Give me your read on that now that we've got a little bit of time and we can get into some clear air to see what happened.
Right. When as a committee member, you're charged with putting together best team of players, the best talent. Caitlin is just a rookie in the WNBA, wasn't playing bad, but wasn't playing like she's playing now. If we had to do it all over again, the way that she's playing, she would be in really high consideration of making the team because she is playing head and shoulders above a lot of people, shooting the ball extremely well. I mean, she is an elite passer. She's just got a great basketball IQ, and she's a little more seasoned in the pro game.
In a couple of months,
yeah, as she was great, 2 months ago.
That's great perspective to add there.
You buy that if it was five more games, say, for Caitlin Clark, she'd be on the
but
team?
But she's not shooting the ball very well. She's exposed herself as the great passer that she is. I mean, Rebecca Lobo said she's the best passer in the WNBA already. First it was she didn't go to the tryouts, she didn't go through the process. Then it was she never played with those players before. The excuse is a different one mm-hmm. every week. But I don't buy the fact that the committee is only concerned with gold and not marketing a league that's lost money 25 straight years. David Stern put Rebecca Lobo on the team. Go watch the documentary Dream On about the 96 Olympics.
Great doc.
He needed eyes. He needed households to start that league. He needed the exposure. They could have had it here.
Could have. 11 games in 20 days for Clark to start the WNBA career. That's what they have based it all on. That's 1 hour in the books here on the Lombardi Line. We'll revisit some of the top headlines in the NFL when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both a college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at vsin.com/subscribe. Pick the plan that works best for you. That is vsin.com/subscribe. A win total or two at you, Mike, in our final segment, college football-wise. We'll also have some MLB plays of the day. Good stuff to break down here. And we also have, of course, would Palm have a qualm to close out the show? You have a qualm with Lorenzo Mercedes' shot selection and a key sequence of the first set.
Ghastly.
Ghastly. I think that would be a great way to describe Mercedes. Djokovic wins the first set there, 6-4, in the final men's tennis semifinal of the night. There from Roland Garros. Let's go back to the NFL right now. Welcome in Jeff Kurz. We got to our progressive guest line. Covers the Philadelphia Eagles, writes on the general NFL as well for CBS Sports. We welcome in Jeff at Jeff Kerr CBS. Really the question on all of our minds, Jeff, to start today is after watching the new kickoff rule there in the Hall of Fame game, what your takeaways were and how it has compared to what coaches, at least in Philadelphia camp, have been talking about expectations and how the new kickoff rule will impact the game this year.
Yeah. So I was talking to a couple of players about a lot of the special teams guys about the new kickoff rule and how it's going to affect things. And there weren't any concerns or anything like that. I mean, the Eagles, they practiced it, but they practiced a lot of it behind closed doors because they probably had some creativity, what they're doing with the kickoff rule. Me personally, I think it's a work in progress. I was at the owners meetings in March when they announced it. And I'm like, oh, so it's like the XFL rule. And they're like, well, no, it's going to be a little different than that. And they're definitely right. It was different. Very intriguing. I will say that. I like seeing more of the returns, but I still think we need a bigger sample size. And I just hope they don't do too many radical changes because of a couple preseason games.
Jeff, I want to talk about how this team rebounds after the disastrous finish last year. 10-1 at one point, obviously. The collapse and then really getting dominated in Tampa Bay in the wild card round. There were reports around the team that they had quit on Sirianni. What has he done to reestablish relationships with the players and assert himself as a leader? And second part of the questions, if things go bad early in Philly, is Nick Sirianni a candidate to be the first coach fired?
Well, there's definitely pressure on Nick Sirianni to win this year. And The Eagles basically cannot lose in the wild card round again. And in fact, I don't even know if him losing in the divisional round would be safe. It depends how they lose in the divisional round, right? you say you're in the wild card round, you win, and then you get blown out in the divisional round. With the talent on this team, it's probably unacceptable. So I think they need to get off to a fast start. I do think Nick gets the year, though. I don't think they're going to make such a brash move. But in terms of the reports of like players quitting on him, I found that to be a little far-fetched, personally. I don't see that with a lot of the players on this team. I think they got rid of the players that I just don't think they had the swagger on that team last year. That's why I thought CJ Gardner-Johnson came back. That's why I think they got guys like Quinyon Mitchell in the draft. And they got guys that, you know, even Saquon Barkley, I think they wanted to get some leaders or, you know, some guys with more swagger on this team. So I think that's how they're going to correct it. And again, you know, we asked Nick about this in June, about maybe changing up his offseason regimen. And he goes, well, can you really argue with, you know, they were 5-0 to start last year, 10-1, they were 8-0 the year before, they were last up being team in the NFL 2 years in a row. So I think you're going to see the starters play a little more this preseason, but I don't think I haven't seen that many drastic changes with Nick. Although last night's open practice with the link was 2 hours. I wasn't expecting that.
He's Jeff Kerr joining us right now at Jeff Kerr CBS. One thing Nick Sirianni attempting to do to help shore up at least one side of the football, you bring in one of the more respected DCs we have had in the last decade. Vic Fangio comes in. At the same time, Jeff, a lot of question marks about the actual personnel that's there for Philly. When you finish bottom five in the league in run and in pass defense, where do you stand, A, on what sort of system, what the early reports are on Fangio's scheme defensively, and B, just where the personnel is at after a team that was really exposed in the home stretch of 2023?
Yeah, so when they got rid of Matt Patricia and Sean Desai and brought in Fangio, I'm like, oh, okay, well, if you're going to change up the if you're going to get rid of the people in Fangio's scheme, you might as well bring in the actual, you know what I mean? What's the old chef saying? Like, you might as well bring in the actual chef instead of, you know, a duplicate or whatever, or I almost forget the saying, but anyway, you might as well bring in the guy that actually makes the meal with Vic Fangio. And a lot of the players, like, there's a lot of Georgia guys on this team, right? They like how hard Vic Fangio coaches. They're used to that with Kirby Smart. And a lot of the rookies are liking that too, like, because that culture is established. Like, Quinyon Mitchell likes to be coach hard. Cooper DeJean hasn't been at practice because of his injury, but he likes to be coach hard. I'm very concerned about the linebacker position, personally. I don't think Zach Vaughn and Devin White, they're the first team guys. I'm just not sold. I think they got to find more depth at linebacker. I mean, N'Kobe Dean, I think they want him to win a first team job. We'll see. Again, still early in camp. I do like their secondary, though, a lot. They're going to have a good cornerback, too, where that's Isaiah Rogers, where that's Kaylee Ringo on the outside. Quinyon Mitchell looks like he's going to be in the slot. James Bradbury's moving to safety. Not going to be on first team, but they got depth there. They're still going to be getting Sidney Brown back at some point. Cooper DeJean will be back at some point. So there's a lot of depth at cornerback and safety. Their secondary should be a lot better. Their pass rush, Bryce Huff gets to the quarterback a lot. Nolan Smith's improved. Jalen Carter is going to be an absolute beast. Honestly, guys, if Vic can get this defense to the middle of the pack, I consider that a very, very successful year. And Eagles are probably going to win a lot of games as a result.
Jeff, who's going to emerge as the third receiver behind A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith?
Man, that's a very good question, because there's a lot of candidates for that job. So, I mean, Paris Campbell is the veteran, but Brandon Covey has been a guy that, and again, he's already an excellent punt return, but he's a guy Jalen Hurts trusts. He gets more separation than anybody outside of A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith on that team. He's certainly considered. Johnny Wilson, six-round rookie from Florida State, he's getting reps at the first team, but he's more of an outside guy. To me, that battle is between Paris Campbell, John Ross, and Brandon Covey. And look, they've all played well, but I think Covey's kind of emerging as the leader in the clubhouse, at least after 1 week.
Jeff Kerr with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line as we look at the rest of the league here. Jeff does a great job covering the league for CBS. You just did a really nice breakdown, too, of talking about all these early training camp stories. Is it reaction or overreaction? One story that we led the show with, it's the Justin Herbert piece of things with the plantar fascia injury out the rest of the preseason. How do you expect that to impact things in a year where there's a lot of expectation around Jim Harbaugh immediately turning around the Chargers?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I love what Jim Harbaugh has done. You can tell he's established his culture there. I know it's big for Herbert that Harbaugh is his coach, but it's unfortunate he's not going to be on the field for most of camp because you're learning a completely different offense with Greg Roman than Kellen Moore. And I think Herbert needed those weeks to kind of prepare. And I think, look, I'll give Harbaugh and Roman credit. They are going to make Justin Herbert's life easy those first couple of weeks when he's coming back. You're not going to rely on this guy to throw the ball 40, 50 times. They weren't going to do that anyway, but I think they're going to rely on their run game. The question is J.K. Dobbins healthy? Is their offensive line good enough, right? Corey Linsley retired. So can Rashawn Slater get back to being Rashawn Slater? Because he's a really good left tackle. That's what I'm concerned of. And I pointed out the Bengals last year. Look, I thought the Bengals were going to be fine because Joe Burrow's been used to that offense. Well, he came back, he wasn't fine, and they started out, 2-2, 2-3. They never really recovered. Burrow got hurt, and their season was kind of lost. And they did pick up their stride at the end of the year, but they didn't make the playoffs. The Chargers are very fortunate that they got the Panthers and the Raiders the first 2 weeks because they should be able to start 2-0. But if they slip up, and again, you can slip up to an Antonio Pierce coach team very easily, and you'll know what Carolina's going to be. It can be a very ugly start because you got Kansas City and Pittsburgh right after that.
Jeff, we got about a minute left. Is it really worth a bet that Justin Fields takes the first snap for the Steelers?
I think that's gaining momentum. If you want to take your bet now, I think I would do it personally because Russell Wilson's been out and Wilson's going to get every chance in the world to win that job. But if George Pickens likes Justin Fields, if the younger players like Justin Fields, then if Arthur Smith is starting to get even more intrigued by Justin Fields, this is supposed to be a developmental year for him. I still think the Steelers are going to be arrogant enough to have Russell. I still think that they're going to be arrogant enough for Russell Wilson to start, but I would definitely take a bet on that because you never know.
I mean, Wilson was -1,000 in a lot of places. Look, he's very, very well favored compared to a lot of these other quarterback battles. Great insights from Jeff Kerr. Follow him at Jeff Kerr CBS. Great to have you on, Jeff. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
When we come back, full baseball slate on this Friday. Some big, big series, some team debutantes after the All-Star break. We'll break them all down with Mike when we come back.
Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All sorts of great content is up right now at our new look website, optimized for mobile, vsin.com. Matt Eumanns with a deep dive article on scouting all the quarterback depth charts for NFL preseason. Well worth your time, along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and our college football and NFL betting guides. Check those all out right now at vsin.com.
Some bets just don't sit right with Mike Palm.
You took all the money you made and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters?
Are you considering a bet that would make him sick?
I'm going to throw up.
It's time to ask Mike, would Palm have a qualm?
I love that animation for would Palm have a qualm. That's new since I last hosted with you on a Friday.
They just keep improving things around here.
Yeah, clearly. That's great. Really well. Really well. Ryan Hunter with the voice, the soundtrack of that, leading it. Would Palm have a qualm? Today, it is college football NFL parlay edition. So get ready for that, Mike. We start locally where we are in Las Vegas. UNLV football. Great year under Barry Odom last year. They kept Barry Odom. They are the third betting favorite on the board in the Mountain West. UNLV to make the Mountain West title game, definitely live, parlayed with the Raiders to make the playoffs, almost 10-1.
I puke on that. Stephanie always really, she regrets to make this about physical illness.
Justin Emery doing a great job.
She keeps saying it's a feeling of physical, but it's having trepidation over it. I say no because of this second part of it. How do you make the playoffs without a quarterback? They have no quarterback. They're heading into the year without a quarterback. They got a backup, Minshew. He's a nice backup. He's like Fitzpatrick. He can come in and spell you for four games. What evidence have they seen that Aiden O'Connell is a pro quarterback? I really would like to know that. I didn't see it at Purdue. And I certainly didn't see it last year. They won a game where he didn't complete a pass after the first quarter against the Chiefs on Christmas Day. I have a big qualm with this.
Big qualm. Antonio Pierce's, his optimal dreamlike strategy is just run the ball into the line for 3 yards every single time.
They punted five times in the game. They had to win against the Colts. They punted five times from their 45 to the Colts 40 in that 15-yard range on fourth and one or two.
Unreal.
They punt in a game they had to win late in the year to get the wild card. Punted five times.
Nobody said anything when he was an interim.
He's a player's coach.
By week six, Mike, you're going to see a lot of, especially from the people who actually watch the coaching decisions in-game. I mean, Pierce is going to get raked through the coals this year as far as in-game management. Okay, this has the shortest odds of any of these we'll talk about. Okay. Maryland football. Terps, over 4.5 conference wins parlayed with the Ravens to win over 12.5 games this year. Plus,
no, I don't like the Ravens. I don't like the second part of this. I'm okay with Maryland. I'm not. I wouldn't discount it because of Maryland. Baltimore has a lot going against them. All right, they have the schedule. They have the fact that not only do they lose starters on the defensive side of the ball, and they got guys to come in, but they haven't played in a starting role. They lose their defensive coordinator. I get it, Harbaugh's a good coach in continuity. They have a defensive coordinator who's never called a play at any level, never called a play. Michael Lombardi makes a great point about the decline of Justin Tucker. And you go and look at his numbers over 50 yards last year. Could he be done? We don't know. But kickers is not a steady decline. There's a plateau and a cliff, right? And then finally, is there any worse way to lose a conference title game than totally abandoning your identity? Down one score, all of a sudden you can't throw the ball. Oh, and by the way, what's wrong with Lamar Jackson? What's wrong with him?
He's getting sick.
He's getting sick all the time.
Something in the crab cakes.
I mean, what is it? Is there something wrong with him? And I don't know if it's COVID-3 or there's something else, if it's a blood disease. I don't know, but there's something wrong with the guy. Qualm
on Ravens. Also, if we're talking just general strategy on betting futures this year, in the AFC, win total over is probably not the way you want to go. I mean, it's more like playoffs, I would say, AFC title odds, because it is such a gauntlet. I mean, the Ravens could be 10-7 and be totally fine, but it's a very, very tough conference this year. With that in mind, let's go down to one other one. This is the one I want to sell you on, Mike. I like this one. Ohio State to win the national title. I feel pretty confident.
I thought you were going to the Georgia Falcons one.
Well, I wanted to skip that because
there's a zero missing. How could it only be 9-1? The Falcons should be more than that to be the one seed.
That one is Falcons to get the one seed Georgia. And Georgia to go undefeated. Yeah, we're not. We have no desire there. But Ohio State to win the national title, which regardless of what you think about Ohio State, I mean, they're almost guaranteed to be in the playoff and likely to be in that second round at the very minimum. And then the Browns to make the playoffs, 11-1. And I like Cleveland this year. To me, a very underrated roster. But it comes down to Deshaun Watson, a quarterback, as the one weakness on that team. Can you get even mediocre quarterback play out of him? I believe that Cleveland can. They can scheme that to be the case this year in an AFC North that we just talked about the deficiencies for Baltimore. I'm not totally sold on Cincinnati immediately ascending to the top in that division. Cleveland is a wild card team. Makes a lot of sense to me. 11-1.
I'm not in love with the Browns because I no one can explain to me the road home differential defensively. You can't explain it. And then Jameis Winston going to lead him to the playoffs? You really believe Deshaun Watson will return to his Clemson form?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying middle of the pack.
I'm saying no qualm because they could make the playoffs. They could be a 6 or 7 seed. I don't think they're falling off a cliff. I could see them being very good at home and stealing a few games on the road. I can see them winning 9 or 10 games. So I don't have a qualm with this. I'm not ready to back the Browns.
Yeah. Could the explanation be as simple of Cleveland and defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz got a little ahead of their skates by getting so much huge turnover plays against the bad quarterbacks at home that they maybe they flipped the pendulum too much, got too confident, too aggressive in their scheming, and as a result started giving up massive, massive plays on the road. That to me that's a logical explanation that they were so, I mean, remember we had articles coming out. I remember talking to Michael about it. This was all the numbers were that it was one of the great historical defenses ever, the Cleveland Browns. Maybe that got to Jim Schwartz's head a little bit from a play calling perspective. That's the best way I would describe it. Okay. But they're still really good. Okay, we move on. Michigan, over 9 wins in 2024. Parlayed with the Lions doing the NFC, 12-1.
Trying to get to 10 wins for Michigan. I think it's really tough. They lost so much. They're not going to beat Texas. All right.
If you say, because 9-3 feels like a very logical record. which then in that case,
yeah, but it's over. If this was over 8.5, I don't know what the odds would change. I think this is tough.
Well, my point is, you're basically betting on, okay, is this just the Lions to win the NFC bet? Because odds are there's a really good chance that that Michigan part of it just gets knocked out based on how we break down the schedule, and this becomes a bet at what's 5-1, 6-1 on the Lions to win the NFC.
Is USC bad? I mean, Michigan's a big favorite against them. I have a qualm as the way it's written at over 9.
Qualm. We found one no qualm so far. It's Ohio State that cross sport parlay. Not that we would be making any of these bets, by the way. This is the list we have today. How about on the same token, Big Ten, Penn State make the college football playoff, and the Eagles to win the NFC.
Yes, and no. Second part, no good. Eagles aren't winning the NFC.
You're not on the Eagles.
No, I think they're the fourth best team in the NFC. I think you have to go a long way from the team quitting, which I think there's some element of that. They're calling Jalen Hurts names on the bench. I mean, there's some deep-seated problems there. I don't think they got rid of everybody, as our guest would suggest. So I think there's a lot to overcome to be better than the Packers, Lions, or 49ers.
It's always concerning to me when you have a team that statistically was so bad in one area, and you start looking at positional rankings across the board, whether it's PFF, Sharp Football, and all of a sudden it's just you wipe out anything that happened poorly in the previous year, and you go, oh yeah, no, they're fine. They're going to be top half of the league across the board.
How about this one we didn't get to yet, the 103-1?
Ewers to win Heisman and CJ Stroud to win MVP.
No qualm. No qualm.
Is that a Kevin Malone thought of if it's over? His is 1,000-1. You bet it. 100-1.
Why can't Stroud win MVP?
I'm not saying he can.
I think the Heisman race is wide open. We just talked about all the weapons they put around Stroud. Now, if Diggs is not a sour character there and a bad actor, I think that can be a really good offense. And that team could win. Now, what is it? They have to be a 1 or a 2 seed that's traditionally to be the... I think 103-1 is very reasonable price for that
pricing,
that parlay.
Probably, you know, it's only triple digit, but it's the most appealing of anything we have here. Our last one. Does Mike Palm have a qualm with this? The story of Mary Jacobs, 77-year-old in England, who is the owner of what might be Europe's largest collection of bedpans, trying to find him a new home after they failed to sell at auction. Do you have a qualm with buying collectibles like old bedpans or not?
Well, what would be her attachment to it? I this story to me is ludicrous.
Apparently, she saw a slipper bedpan come in, bought it for 50 pence, and that was the start. She wanted to collect something different. It snowballed from there. That was her quote.
My aunt collected precious moments. You know what a precious moment is? Are you too young for that?
I'm too young for that.
They have these little figurines. They're all like little boys and girls that are angels. They're like this big. They have it in Missouri, somewhere like Hannibal, Missouri.
I called a game there.
Precious Moments Museum and everything. I'm out on bedpans. Qualm.
You're out on bedpans.
Qualm.
Hometown of one Mark Twain. Called two games there. Hannibal, Missouri. Right on the river. Northeast Missouri. Great stuff. Mike Palm, always a pleasure being with you, sir.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, we will do it again tomorrow. For Justin Emery, our producer Jeremy Wagner, our technical director, whole rest of the team here at Circa, we say so long in this edition of the Lombardi Line. Sharp Money coming your way right after this.